You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Thank you for tuning in and listening to The Real Short Box. My name is Donald, and this is part 5 of Comic Shop Talks. Kevin is with me, as always, and we have some guests here.
Yes, we have the Duke of Newhall, Julio. We have the Sensational One. We have Walter 818. We have Aiden. And, of course, we have Raphael.
And Kevin will eventually talk into the mic so you can hear half of that. So thank you for tuning in. We appreciate that. And we're going to be talking about a lot of fun stuff, a lot of fun comic book stuff. So let's get started.
I think the good thing with Bad Idea was, yes, they're gimmicky, and some people don't like their style, but they're putting out good products. None of the books that I've gotten from them were shit.
That's how Valiant started. All their books were good. So, I mean, that's where, when they first started with Jim Shooter and...
Shooter, yeah.
Yeah, they were all quality books, and you want to read them. The art on the cover wasn't amazing. You know, what brought you to it was the good stories that they were telling.
What I loved is when they didn't have a writer on a book, Shooter would just jump in and write it and then put somebody else's name. He'd make up a name. So, like, half the shit with names, you're like, who's that? It's probably Jim Shooter.
Yeah.
So I thought it was great.
I loved all those books.
You know, he did a great interview, Harbinger.
He did. He was on that Chris Claremont documentary I was talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. Came out in like 2017 or 18. You can watch it on YouTube and Amazon Prime. But it's actually a really good documentary, and just to see the relationship between Claremont and Shooter. They did not get along. Okay. It was just the Chris Claremont documentary.
Did
it's basically about his run on
anybody?
X-Men. Who?
Yeah,
Shooter?
I think he got along.
Shooter did.
He got along considering...
Layton?
Considering his level of superstardom, he got along with Shooter probably the best compared to John Byrne, who absolutely hated him.
Right.
Editorial, who hated him. And who else was probably from that era?
Claremont was pretty hot-headed, too.
Yeah. No, Claremont's hot-headed, but I think he respected him because... Shooter was still aiming for good stories.
At the end of the day, Shooter was trying his best. But then as Marvel got more and more into the idea of X-Men being a commodity, Shooter
Spider-Man.
Could no longer hold back the dam that was cracking, and it finally burst around him, and it was all like, now we got to put out 15 miniseries of X-Men. You got Gambit, the miniseries,
bought Marvel. That was a big factor.
Yeah, and then when Shooter got politely taken away and Harris took over,
It wasn't popular either.
It was Harris.
Bob Harris.
Falco took over after Shooter.
Well, it was Harris that they were talking about in the documentary. So unless the documentary is wrong, I don't know. But they were saying that Harris took
Harris
over.
Harris was the X-Men group editor, but before him, it was Simonson and...
if you're talking about editor-in-chief...
Yeah, EIC was Tom DeFalco.
Right, but Harris did... Harris took over, and Shooter was, like, put aside.
Well, no, Shooter was kicked out because nobody liked him.
Right.
Harris...
Because he was taller than everyone.
Well, he was taller.
6'6".
Harris was moved up to... group editor.
Right. And when Harris took control, everything, like, they were even talking about it, everything became more like an actual company. It no longer felt like a clubhouse. It was all about the sales and what book is going to get them more money. And if something's lower, how can they make it hotter and put Wolverine in it? And then when you had...
Or Punisher.
Wolverine is everything.
The nail in the coffin for Claremont was that Harris sided with Jim Lee.
Yes. Yeah.
And put him to pasture. And then when Claremont tried to stay on the books, so that way he could, continue with the X-Men, they just kicked him out because they said there's no point.
They saw him as a 17-year veteran, old man that was no longer in touch with the current market ability of these characters.
And then your favorite writer came in, Fabian.
No, it was Scott Lobdell.
That piece of shit can eat 5 dicks.
And then
five whole ones or just
whole ones?
Okay. Are they hard?
Yes. Right, one soft. The rest are hard. I'm surprised. Yeah. You just eat them like corn on the cob.
Instead of one artist, they're having 17 writers kick them out.
Yeah, all at one time.
Basically, yeah, it was like Liefeld was huge, so Liefeld basically took over New Mutants. Yeah,
they
hopped over
the
to
year of the
Superman.
Torso. Was that what?
Yeah.
The year of the torso only.
And then Jim Lee was huge, so then that was basically a nail in the coffin for Claremont. And Silvestri actually worked pretty well with Claremont for like 4 years, I think. 4 or 5 years.
Probably 3, but he jumped to Wolverine with Hama.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he was just doing his thing over there.
Mm-hmm. And then when Liefeld, it was funny because when Liefeld was working with Simonson, she would write something, and then he wouldn't like the idea, so he would just draw something different, which then changed the story. So then she had to change the story around what he was drawing.
Right. God.
That she had to go back in and edit it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, there was nothing with people running.
No.
So yeah. I guess when the
they were just there
left the forum, a lot of people probably weren't too upset about it then.
They went from A to B panel.
The old schoolers, the old school fans and stuff probably weren't so upset.
Editorial probably didn't care. Probably was happy they were gone.
Right.
The company was happy.
And that created created an excitement in the industry again. Them leaving. So it actually ended up being very good for comic books at that time.
Right.
Because then, Image was seen as this huge independent company and such a boon for other people that thought, maybe someday I'll open my... And then they were like, wow, they did well. I'm going to do it. So
there
then you would see that.
There was a shitload of companies back then.
And they were originally, I think they were originally going to go to Malibu, or at least some of them.
Young Blood.
Yeah, Malibu, they were teamed up with them.
Malibu, all those number one issues, if you look at them, they all have
Malibu logos. And
matter of fact, we discussed it on one of the podcasts about how Malibu was the number two company briefly at one point.
Yeah, they outsold DC.
Outsold DC briefly.
Insane. Yeah.
The most expensive Malibu book is Spawn.
Yeah, for all intents and purposes.
Yeah. Really is.
Copper Age classic.
I had a guy, you'll love this, Kevin. He was posting on Instagram, and he's a seller on there, and he's the one I told you to avoid.
Okay.
And he was posting on there, and he's like, I've been seeing, I picked this up earlier, and it's a Ultra Force gold foil, and he's like, do you think I can get 75 for it?
Yeah, not yet.
And I messaged him right underneath it, and I was like, how about a $10? It's like, you ain't going to get more than that, buddy.
Matter of fact, we got hooked up when we did our interview a few years ago. Remember how they gave us a couple of gold?
Oh, they owed it to me.
That's true. They did.
I filled out. I got the... They did a stamp program from Brevara Comics, which is a Malibu line. And if you got every 20
years later, you collected.
I did. Yeah. And if you got every single... I sure shit did. You got every single stamp, and you put it on this card, you could mail it in. They didn't finish the runs on the books, but I had every stamp of all the books that came out before the company went under. So I never finished. I couldn't do it. And then when I wrote them a letter about it, I never got a response. So when we did the interview...
It's like 25 years later.
Yeah, I brought it up. And I was like, hey, so I got this card. You know, I still have it at home in Ohio. And like, where's my books, guys?
That's such an asshole move. You're like, oh, you know that company you had that failed? Well, I had its failure.
The one that Marvel destroyed and kept.
You know, there's the principle of things, sir.
So what did he say?
So he said to his buddy, like his assistant buddy or whatever, he was like, hey, go see if we have some of these. So he gave me over some of these books.
Where were you that they would have them?
They had a panel.
Why did they bring them with them?
They had a panel. Was it WonderCon?
They just had some extra books.
It was WonderCon.
WonderCon. And then they were just like, they just had some extra Malibu books from the panel because they were going to show them and talk about them and stuff, so they gave them.
You know what that sounds like? It sounds like those has-been actors that keep their headshots.
In their attaché case.
Yeah. In a way, but all these guys have gone on to some success, so they're not really has-beens by any means. They're still very relevant.
And what's funny, remember we asked them about
some in jail?
Contractually?
Gerard Jones.
Oh, is he in jail? I know he got in trouble for
some trouble.
He got convicted.
Now, here's a question.
That's why you're never going to see
leading
any of his books reprinted. Yeah.
Leading slightly off topic, but on topic.
Malibu.
CGC being bought out by Jay-Z's group.
Are you serious? I didn't hear about this.
Yeah. You didn't see the meme? I got 98 problems, but. CGC ain't one.
Blackstone. Blackstone is buying.
That's pretty good.
Is buying CGC, which is owned. Well, they're in. They haven't
finalized the deal yet.
Well, the deal's done. It's just there's logistics to get the deal done.
Right, legal stuff, yeah.
Right. That and Jay-Z is basically the head
chairman of the board.
Or
it's
the multi, he had the majority
he's
of
a primary
money
investor.
Owner. Yeah.
Yeah,
majority stake.
And you know, we had a guy who we find to be, you know, entertaining. Discuss this in his Instagram and how Jay-Z's buying. You know, see Sage's video about you know, yeah, how Jay-Z's jumping into the game, but how comic book guys have done it. But if you think about it, there's a lot of artists that are collectors. Guys from the Wu-Tang.
Method Man.
Yeah, huge comic collector.
Big time collector.
You know, Nicolas Cage was a huge collector before he sold all his stuff. But there's a lot of guys who. So for Jay-Z, this is kind of like a way to make a shitload of money, but also he was also a collector.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a way for him to
nerd out a little bit,
because he gets to go in there and see all these big books that come in all the time or whatever. See, you know, I didn't know it, but CGC actually sells their own graded books. Not books that you send in, but they have books that they grade and they sell on their website.
Interesting.
Oh yeah, a lot of 9/8s.
Then you think about it. How right is that?
They shouldn't do that.
It's a conflict of interest.
Does CBCS do the same thing? Or?
I'm certain that all of them do.
I'm sure.
Or they keep the good books?
No. What they do is they have their own books that they buy and they get graded, and then they sell them. And I'm certain that, you know, they're... I mean, I don't know. Some people say that they don't give out a lot of 9/8s. Because they don't want to flood the market with 9/8, so they sometimes don't. They'll grade it lower because they don't want to say that they're always giving people 9/8.
That's a conspiracy.
I mean, I'm just saying what people say, you know.
So it's just now the two major grading companies have now been bought out. So Beckett, which bought out CBCS a couple years ago, now
where's the buyer for PGX?
Yeah. I think We Could Be Heroes would be an excellent buyer of PGX, or purchaser of PGX.
I'm not going to comment on it.
What are you buying if you're buying PGX outside of like that pressing machine, that encapsulation machine?
Yeah.
In Oregon, it's based in Oregon. So you're,
they
you're
still
buying.
Have
that's
a
the
name.
Question though. If you buy PGX,
is it a good name?
Yeah.
No, but that's the thing, is if a different company bought PGX and you publicized that a different company was taking it over, the sins have been erased. All you got to do is set up for improvement.
Yes. Hey, yes. I'm not Catholic.
And you have
a name.
No, but
you
I'm saying.
Wipe away the sins.
You got to get rid of everybody and say you're taking it over and you're going to make improvements and you wiped out all the shit and you're basically starting a new
company.
Bam! You're also eliminating one the same time.
You're not. No one's.
Oh, there are people do it all the time.
How about WCHC grading?
No.
Yeah, that's. Why? Just. Like, make it, you don't have to be a PGX, doesn't have to be a CGC, doesn't have to
the
be
grading
a CBCS.
Now, Julio will tell you.
Just say graded.
Yeah,
you
Julio
know,
will tell you.
Like that.
Julio will tell you, you know, Beckett makes some of the nicer cases.
They do.
Their cases are clear, right?
My CBCS cases do look nice.
I didn't say CBCS,
oh,
I said Beckett.
Beckett.
Oh, for the cards.
You've never seen it.
They do comics, too. They great, like... You can get their a comic that has signatures on it. And they verify the signatures, and
they don't grade the comic book. They encapsulate it, and they give you a grade on the signature itself.
Yeah. And the cases are really nice,
super clear. We saw them at the con.
I just showed
them.
There was one on
there. You give me ideas now.
Yeah, you can.
And
it's a great idea.
Any size,
dude. Any size.
Any size.
You can do a treasure. You could do a treasure.
All my treasure books, I can get them.
But
they won't be graded. They'll be encased, but they won't be graded.
Will they encase it even if there's no autograph involved?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
PSA DNA.
Uh huh.
Will encase a comic for a price. You can set a card in. So I don't want my card graded. I just want it encased. And they'll encase it, and say, okay, I want the signature verified and encased, and then they'll charge you for that. And then you say, I want it graded. It's a different story. But they will encase a card and not grade it for a different price. They charge
PSA DNA actually grades signatures.
Mm-hmm.
Grades them. Like,
you know,
the quality
of the signature.
Weird.
No.
It is weird.
No, what they do is they're grading, in fact, is it off, because and I'll tell you why. Baseball cards and basketball cards have started this new thing where they go to a meet, and they go to, like, say, for instance, it's like Michael Jordan. And you take a sheet, 2, 4, 5 giant sheets of these clear stickers. And Jordan will sign all those clear stickers on every one of those stickers. And then they'll print his cards and take the sticker and put it on each card. So there's a difference. There's an on-card signature, which means Jordan signed a card itself in front of one of them. There's a sticker auto where he signed on a sticker, and his sticker went on the card later, which means they have Jordan for 5 hours. The cards aren't printed yet, so they have him do it on a sticker, and then when the cards are printed, they'll put it on a sticker. And then sometimes you'll get in a pack where it's a redemption card, where it's a piece of paper that says you get a Michael Jordan autograph that you have to then send in to be redeemed because the card wasn't created yet.
I'd rather have that than a sticker.
Right. So what ends up happening is that PSA DNA is they grade it based on, is the signature off-centered? Is it centered? Is it smudged? How clear is it? Is it, if it's on sticker auto, did it come off the sticker? So now you're missing part of the letter? Because he signs really big, and now the loop's not there because he went over the sticker. So the grade is based on how clear it is. Is it quality of sticker? Is it smudged? Because sometimes you'll get a card, but, oh, shit, autograph, check it out. And then you'll fuck up the signature. And then when you send it in, it looks all smudged or unreadable. So that's the grade. And they do that for baseballs all the time. Instead of baseball and they get graded, they look at the grade. They look at the signature and say, is it sun faded? Someone had a Mickey Mantle on the shelf and the sun hit it. And when it was just a ballpoint pen, now you can barely see what it is.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, so that's what they graded. They graded based on that.
I had a Nolan Ryan autographed ball, right? Mm-hmm. And I was little, and when I got it, so I took it out of the case, and I put my hands on it.
Oh, no.
And I was looking at it, and then I put it back in the case, right? I did that probably like 5 or 6 times to show people. Over the years, about probably like when I went back home to visit, like maybe 15 years ago or something, when I pulled that out, it had yellow
hands
all around the signature. Not on the signature, but all around it.
The oily hands.
Yeah, and I was like, fuck.
But it can be clean, though.
Yeah, I'm sure it probably could be, but like...
Don't you hate your 12-year-old self now?
Well, no, I mean, you know. I mean, I can, like he's saying, I could get it clean, but I just went and I got another one. Like, because they were cheap, you know? Like, it's not like... That long ago, that alive. Shit was still cheap.
Yeah, you can still go.
Yeah, and he's still alive and will sign it. So I just got another ball that was already signed and already had a case. And I was like, I'm not touching this son of a bitch.
But you know what makes the ball that you know how you deter the ball that you had signed when you were 12. Why when you would sell it, it'd be worth more than the ball you bought brand new. It's determined by who the commissioner in baseball was on that baseball.
Was it Faye Vincent?
No, because it tells you what year the baseball was made. So you can have Nolan Ryan go sign a ball, and they look at the baseball, and they look at the commissioner, and it'll tell them, who the commissioner at the time was. Now, commissioner could be there for 10, 15 years. Then it's determined by this what's used for the stitches. And so guy who prices the ball can look at it and tell you, okay, well, Bug Selig signed it, so we know Bug Selig was commissioner from this year to this year. And then they can determine based on, what color stitching, whatever. They can tell by the ball itself what year the ball was made.
A ball that I kind of see what you're saying. So a ball that was signed, maybe that you got signed on the field by somebody, is going to be worth more than, like, let's say, so you got Babe Ruth or something to sign it, and you were there when he hit a home run or whatever, and he signed your ball. That's going to definitely be more valuable than, and they can authenticate that, than if it's after he retired and he needed the money and he was just signing 50,000 balls or whatever.
Pete Rose. It's the Pete Rose story, right? Yeah. Let's say you buy a ball that Pete Rose signed in his rookie year. And the commissioner, that was the commissioner's last year could be in a commissioner. Mm-hmm. So they go and look, oh, it's Bug Selig. He retired in, 96. And that was the first year of, let's say, Pete Rose, 96, which is not. But then they can tell you that ball was signed in his rookie year, and he didn't sign very often. Where you look at now, Pete Rose will sign anything, and he signs millions of things, and he'll put whatever you want it.
Sorry, Stan Lee of baseball.
Yeah, I got 4 baseballs that are signed by Pete Rose that say, "Sorry, I bet on baseball."
You have 4 of them?
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Like, you catch him. Yeah, I caught him
doing that after like maybe 10 years.
That was his gimmick. I caught him on a flight on the way to Cincinnati, home to Cincinnati, right? And he's wearing it's like he's sitting coach, and I'm sitting next to him in coach. And I went to Reds game, had a baseball with me, and he happened to be sitting there and asked him what he signed. I said, sure. What do you want to say? I go, can you just put future Hall of Famer? So he signed one. Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame. Pete Rose, sorry I bet on baseball. He did all kind of shit. But that's what I'm saying. So baseballs can be determined.
Signed it for free?
Of course. B-rolls, when you're on the plane, they're not going to charge me right then and there. it gets on his square. He's on his square. Yeah. You know?
I would doubt it.
That's what I figured he would do.
Yeah, I was like...
You know?
You were on the plane with multiple baseballs?
Yeah, I was going to baseball. I was going to Cincinnati for a baseball game. So
you got baseballs in Cincinnati you could pick up?
Yeah, probably, but they're cheaper where I get them from.
And you know what? Now we know. You got to have that shit when you're going on a plane.
Yeah, seriously. You never know.
I'm flying back. I'm flying back in like 3 weeks or so to go back to Ohio, and I'm going to go to a couple Indians games. I'm going to buy a couple balls and bring them with me for on the plane just in case.
Well, you should bring a couple people because ain't nobody going to be in that fucking stadium with you.
Yeah. <That's
true. laughs> Bring some fans with you.
Hey, the Indians are... They're, shut your mouth.
Yankees.
Tribe.
No, Indians suck, dick.
They sure do. Indians... You said that Indians suck.
No, they don't. The Yankees suck, dick.
Wait. You said what you said. We got it recorded.
Yeah, well, that ain't going to stay. Obviously, I'm gonna take that out. I'm the one editing this shit. I'm gonna edit the way when you talk. You're gonna say I suck dick. That's what you're gonna say.
What'd you just say?
Yeah, that's what Kevin's gonna say.
Well, I have the original.
You manipulate his voice every night, don't you?
I mean, if you look at comic wise, people can determine. Well, CCC, if it's verified by CCC, they can tell you what month or year it was signed.
Oh, yeah.
But sometimes if you look at Stan Lee's signatures, you can tell
just by the
his
way
early years when he was still young and he was signing, and the years when he would hold his hand and say just...
Although, as
Zombie
you know,
Stan.
Yeah.
They made mistakes. I have a book that they famously made a mistake on, a book he signed 5 years earlier, and they thought he signed it at that particular con, so I lucked out.
Right.
Famous for among yourself.
Yes.
It was that one con and that you went to that no one told you.
We can all, you and I can talk about that time that we went and saw the guy that created.
Oh, no, the Gumby man. Yeah, oh, my God, that was terrible.
Art Clokey?
Yeah, Art Clokey created Gumby, and he was at the Shrine. That are old school, the Shrine was a comic book convention at a place called the Shrine. So they just called it
Shrine.
The Shrine.
Famous for the Oscars. Michael Jackson moves.
More famous for comic books.
The Shrine, I saw Zoo, what was that? It was like 2 months before COVID.
No. But this is like the bad side.
Yeah,
you're still talking about the fancy side, the good side for the Shrine. We're talking about the gymnasium where they would throw you and be like, don't mind the smell.
Yeah.
And, you know, you would just put up with it, and everything's leaking, and there's shit on the floor, and they're literally homeless outside.
I never went there when there was shit on the floor.
I usually am the one that did that. Oh. So.
This is a sad story, though. I mean, you know what it reminds me of? You see the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, right? Remember the thing with Grandpa and the hammer? Come on, Grandpa!
Busting
hat. That's exactly what what's the gentleman's name? The
Art Clokey.
Art Clokey reminded me of. They had to basically force his signature with his hand. And I wanted to go get his signature myself, but then I saw that and I can't do that.
Because it's not him signing. It's in his hand, but the other guy is literally moving it.
When you said shit on the floor, fucking homeless people outside, I thought you were talking about Madison Square Garden.
Oh! How dare you insult MSG?
Or Yankee Stadium.
How dare you? MSG is a classic.
No. Hey, when I went to New York for the first time, I wanted to go to the Garden.
You said there was roses
and I saw the Lakers play the Knicks at the Garden. And yes, you're at the Mecca of basketball at
that's
the Garden.
Right. Yes, you are.
But the Mecca of basketball, right now, trash.
Trash.
No, what I'm saying is that it's in the central part of the city. The rail lines run underneath it. You can take a subway there, get up and go up to the Garden. After the Garden, go down and get something, get out there.
It's so great.
But the Oregon plane. The amount of money that New York has, and they've yet to ever give a shit about renovating the Garden.
That I agree with.
That's why they made the Barclays Center.
But they're never gonna go there. They're never gonna move the Knicks there.
Right.
Because it's the Garden.
You can't. The Garden's always going to be open.
It's like Fenway Stadium.
Like Wrigley Field.
Wrigley Field or Fenway.
The Steinbrenner guy, Steinbrenner said, I own that land. I'm going to build a new stadium there. And then I'm going to build a park for kids to play in next door. And I'm going to use all that write-off to help me out. You know, that ton of money. The Knicks don't have any money. They haven't won in so long.
Staples is going to be the dump.
that guy's going to put so much money in that Clippers arena, he's putting billions.
Yeah.
In. He's going to make Staples Center look like the...
And that's fine.
But
and that's
renovate
fine.
Renovate the Staples Center?
No, no one's going to Clippers. No one's going to... Come on.
Yeah, that's where the Lakers
they
play.
Don't
they're
go there now. They don't go there. Look, okay, the Clippers are the Clippers. You're going to build this giant Houston, like the Cowboys. $50 million, where the fuck it was to build that stadium. Yeah. And they're still trash.
Right. But the whole point is... Arguing about a stadium being shitty is not something that's going to keep people listening to the podcast about comic books.
Yeah. Look, you give the Blue Beetle...
Unless they're having a convention. There.
You give the Blue Beetle...
let that one go.
Yeah, you give the Blue Beetle a new writer, you give him a new artist, and you give him a new book, still trash.
No, like Barry Bill and Ghost Rider.
You let me write that thing. You let me... If you watched...
The Barry Bill, what was the other one?
The Ghost Rider.
The Ghost Rider.
Okay, if you watched... My web series, by the way,
it's
called
good.
Blue Beetle
it's
Tech Corps Returns.
Four seasons.
I plotted this thing out. I created backstories, created new characters, brought in old school Batman characters
to weave them in. But that's how bad it is. Is it your shit is better than the shit they wrote back then? It makes it worse.
Well, here's the thing.
Would
like,
be great if I was in it.
Some of them are bad. Yeah,
we
like
didn't know you yet.
Like some of the stuff's bad. Right. But overall, Blue Beetle was done pretty well. It's just the stuff in the 60s that was, you know.
The Charleston stuff?
Yeah, some of it's a little bit like, you know.
Racist?
A little, not so much.
No, it's good.
Yeah. It's more like just aged, you know. It's just old. So, like, they had to bring it up to date. And they thought that making him kind of a less of a serious character, more of a silly character, made sense. And it did because it created a Batman meets Spider-Man persona for this guy, for this Ted guy. So that's what I went with the web series. I based it a lot about that and then just told the story of this character and basically ended it on a note where he's happy, he's in love, he's got a family now, he's, you know, the original Dan Garrett's back, everybody's reunited, you know, it just ended on such a good note.
And
every plot thread was wrapped up. If you can find an open plot thread, let me know because I'm pretty goddamn sure I wrapped up everything. I had everything written down, so I had these notes of, unlike the writers for Lost or for Game of Thrones.
Oh yes,
I had everything written down.
Or the Star Wars sequel trilogy.
Well, at least I had everything wrapped up at the end, buddy. Like, so you know, take it for what you will. But I'm just saying, like, I finished that shit correct. You know, I came with this idea and I finished that shit correct.
Yeah.
So. Other writers need to think about that shit when they're writing comic
books.
Didn't
you write the last episode of Sopranos?
Yes. Absolutely. That was totally me. By the way, that lost to the A-Team, right?
Like, what the fuck, man? That, you know what?
The Lost, that was...
We had a live... And we do this every Monday. We have live podcasts, and we bring on guests. And just not long ago, we had Julio as a guest, and we had our buddy Chris Turner as a guest. And it was me and Kevin, and we were doing the Goliath of television dramas. And we just slipped some action films in there, series, and some old school stuff like Murder, She Wrote, Columbo, A-Team, stuff like that, right?
Right.
And Murder, She Wrote and A-Team ran away with it. And A-Team ultimately beat Murder, She Wrote at the end. But I swear to God, I thought Murder, She Wrote was going to run away with it.
I thought that, too.
I thought that bitch was going to kill everything.
Well, how dare you call Angelo Lansbury the B word?
No, bitch isn't a good name, dude.
Oh, I see.
He, like you were saying, like it's like, you know, the bitch was gonna win.
Oh, yeah.
Not
I got you. I
that
got you.
Bitch won.
I got you, I
or
got you.
You know, that's a big bitch.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I see.
Yeah,
all right,
dude,
all
right. Murder She Wrote beat Law and Order.
Trash.
Oh,
Breaking Bad.
Trash.
Yes. Breaking Bad.
No, but
Breaking Bad.
No, no, but here it is. Here it is. Here it is.
You got some,
Sopranos.
When you put up wait,
strange ass taste.
No. When you it's the joke. When you put a bad show in a thing, people vote for what the underdog or to flop your thing around, right?
Flopping my thing around.
Sure
right?
But that's what I'm saying is that sometimes you get an unhonest vote because they're just voting to put something up there that shouldn't be there, right?
Oh yeah, some people were voting just they'd never seen it, but they hated the other thing so much.
Right.
Like
and a lot
of people don't like Law and Order.
The guy who built the list didn't think it out and stuck Murder, She Wrote that didn't belong there in the first place.
Are you looking at me?
It was either you or him.
No, it was totally me.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I tried to balance it because
I tried to put Grey's Anatomy on there.
I wanted to try to get The Wire to meet up
like
with Breaking Bad.
Are you a lady?
Right.
I'm thinking about
so
our
I had to put
them
on.
How many ladies are in our audience?
All ladies are on the.
How many? Yeah. Name besides his mother. Name the ladies on the podcast. There's like four of them.
There's Janet, Sammy, Bonnie sometimes, Maria, Angie, Maria, my mom,
mm-hmm.
Your
sometimes your I'm dad's wearing girlfriend. Lady underwear.
Wife, sorry. Sometimes somebody, Katie. Yeah, so there's like seven or eight.
Sky,
yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah,
Sean identifies as a woman.
Yeah.
But he's never been on.
No, he's been on before.
Has he? It's been so long, I forgot.
Every now and again. But I mean, you know.
This is why I don't go on. Walter bullies me.
Walter bullies everyone.
Matter of fact, Walter kind of bullies the podcast. He comes on with these different weird names.
Oh, let's not talk about that. Change.
Yeah, that's great.
You can talk about those names.
Those are great.
Yeah, we can't say his name.
His last name was Gurr. Let's just say that.
We can't do that.
Hey, freedom of speech.
Yeah, well,
look, we're trying to keep the podcast at least PG-13, at least.
Right.
We've already gone by that. We've already surpassed that already.
Look, it's true.
You guys are screwed. Yeah. Look, we want to go to NC-17 territory now.
We are in NC-17 territory, Kevin. I've got my pants off.
Now, put your pants back on now.
Look at this.
No. Don't scare the children here.
Oh.
you see, you're traumatizing.
We're planning to do a live podcast at TorpedoCon.
At TorpedoCon, yes.
As you walk around and interview people and ask them, what do you feel is right when people price books when they're...
That'd be great. We could ask Jim Lee that.
We actually did that one year. It was me, you, and Jarrett.
Yeah.
And we went around to... we didn't ask the people. We just walked around to their booths, and if we saw ridiculous prices, we would pull up the book, and we video recorded it, and we were like, look at this overpriced piece of shit.
What was that guy?
And then we would set it back down and walk off to the
next
booth.
What was that guy? He was trying to sell me something. I don't know what was it. What
we don't know. We weren't there. You didn't invite us.
Well, it's probably you. But it was something so ridiculous. He tried really hard to justify it. I can't remember.
It was something with like a. It had a rolled spine.
Yes, had a rolled spine, but he made it sound like, you know, this is extremely rare.
Right. He's like, it's not every day that like this is a miscorrect print like this.
Was it Julio?
And he's like, it actually could be.
Was it Julio?
No.
It actually could be worth more money. It was like this redheaded guy with a beard or some shit.
And he was.
Yeah, that's probably it.
But he was so
his store is now Torpedo OC.
Ain't that funny? Yeah, so he was trying to
pull one
over on Kevin, and we were like, "Nah, that's not gonna happen."
Yeah, that's not gonna happen.
Pull me once. Shame on you.
Right.
Kevin.
That's right.
You know, the funny part is that when you because Torpedo OC comes on all the time, you know, in between Torpedo Vegas, and a lot of times. You can hear when they're talking about prices and how, you gotta call HQ, man. You gotta call HQ. Really? Fuck. Like, you know, so you can tell that although they're considered Torpedo OC, their management crew is different. But they're starting to see how they're starting to send people from either side both ways to get them to be more aligned with each other.
Well, you have to. You absolutely have to. When your name's on the line, you have to micromanage that shit.
I don't think John cares. Is John right? Julio?
What?
Torpedo?
He cares.
I'm sure he doesn't want anything negative going on.
Right. I mean, if they're over there and they're like, oh, they're, you know, jerking people off in the parking lot for deals on books.
Have you been to either one?
Which one?
Torpedo.
No, I have not.
Either OC or Orange County?
I might have gone to the OC, but it wasn't Torpedo.
Not
Sean, have you been up there?
We're thinking
Sean?
About the right same yeah. store, right?
What's I have that? Not been to.
Is that Jeffrey's?
OC.
Oh, Jeffrey's got bought by some other business.
No,
right?
That's
Heidi Ho.
Heidi Ho.
Oh.
Jeffrey's bought Heidi Ho.
Oh, did they?
Oh,
but Jeffrey's, they changed management or owners.
So
or
who
some
was
shit.
Dad died?
So that's it.
Jeffrey Jr.
Jeffrey's.
I'm thinking of
Kevin
going about
went
August 6th.
And I got some of the best deals on books I'd ever gotten
Jeremy wants
at Jeffrey's.
To go to,
well, tell that Green to the Leibowitzes and the
Orange County?
And the Jeffries.
No.
The Golden Apples and the Jeffries.
You're
going to
drive all the way
there
just for the signing and come back?
Good stories about Jeffrey Sr. and about Bill
November.
From Golden
just
Apple.
Yeah, I heard
nobody
so much
really
about
has decent stories about
the
Ryan or Jeffrey Jr.
You see, that's funny. I've heard so much ever since I moved here to LA about the old school Golden Apple when the original.
Oh, I got to see it once when I was here when I first moved out here. It was still the old school.
No, but
it was a great place to buy books.
That's about the original store. Who passed away. He wasn't around. He was already
dead, by the way.
Yeah. The one that was like three blocks from Fairfax High School.
Yeah, it was actually across the street from Fairfax High School.
It was huge too. Yeah. It was a great place.
You
great
go place. There and like. And you would see stuff you never saw anywhere at any of the local stores out here.
Yeah.
You know? Even their second location, their Valley location, it was just like statues and books. Yeah. The only thing you didn't see probably was keys because they probably kept those behind the...
They used to have them along the wall behind the plexiglass.
Yeah.
Right. Along the top.
I don't remember big keys.
Not major keys. $20.
I remember going in there and getting most of my books off their spinning rack in their store.
Nice.
You see, when I hear these stories, it makes me reminisce about, you know, my shop back in New York where I grew up back in the '90s.
I thought this is your shop.
Yeah.
I'm talking about
here's the thing.
It's basically the soul. It has some soul.
Do you wish, Kevin, you were like slightly older? Because like when we were growing up, when we were younger, the books from the 80s, you know, when we started to get into comics, it was late 80s, probably early 90s, and that's right. when the boom hit. So, right. like, everything around then is still almost kind of worthless.
Right.
So, do you wish that we were born earlier? Because then, like, we would have gotten the Hulk 181s and 180s off the spinner racks right. and stuff back then, because that would have been the cool book that
I don't think anyone here is old enough to pull that book off the rack. Right,
72.
Yeah, I wasn't even a thought yet.
I was 70.
I think anyone on this table was old enough to pull that book on the list.
Yeah, but do you wish that you were born in like?
No, because we'd die sooner.
62. Yeah. Like, if you were born in 1960, let's say, would you be like?
I can tell you what I wish. I wish I had this, or I had, I grew up in baseball card era. Yeah, I did comics. Comics were my fun read, my back, folded up in my back pocket, and I took care of my cards, right?
Right.
You know, but in those days, we had shitty cards. They weren't on really good, I guess card stock.
They were on that brown shit.
And the shitty gum.
Tops, Don Rust.
Toxic gum.
And they were like the blurriest pictures taken because they weren't really good quality. Off-centered, really bad quality. But, you took care of them. The comic books were something I put in my back pocket. And, all you ever talked about was, because you didn't know, there wasn't no, that told you, this is look out, this book's coming in the future, the story's going here. You would just show up and you'd read the book and then you would know what was going to happen the next week when you got to pick up the new book, right? Now, nowadays, you have a conversation with people and says, hey, the new Scream book's coming out. It's going to be about the story.
It's about 6 issues into the future, you'll know what's going to happen.
Yeah, when I was younger, I remember, the shop, they would give me, the comic shop news. It existed back when I was young. Yeah.
And also the preview book. I actually have some of those, the preview book.
But the preview book, they'd make you pay for. Like, true. Or they'd have a copy at the shop you could thumb through, but I never wanted to take the time. So I'd just get the comic shop news, and I'd read it on the can as a kid. Like, that was my dad read the newspaper.
What year was that?
Like, and I'd read
most
comic
people
shop.
Bought, if you were an older fan, you bought and read comic interviews, comic journal, or...
Nerd!
Comic buyer's guide.
Never read
that.
You want
to talk about nerd comics buyer's guide.
And speaking of which, these books were funny.
Those were, they have some stuff in there. But those were where you found out about upcoming storylines. Mm-hmm. That's where you found out about the Black costume.
Right.
Where you found out...
What was the one with the Ninja Turtles one? The Real Heroes?
Amazing Heroes.
Amazing Heroes, that was a magazine kind of comic.
And they all had the same previews, information, and all that. And people would pore over that.
And now people are killing each other.
Well,
one person we know in real life who probably could have picked up 181 is Big Sean. And he was reading those Amazing Heroes and all that and looking, seeing what's coming out. I mean, specifically for his
The one
book.
Thing I got at my comic shop back in those days, or Golden Apple, was you'd always walk in and... It'd always be, so-and-so's pick of the week. Right. Whatever the comics are
or
the shop was working with, and it'd have a copy of it, and it was pick of the week. So you'd grab it and say, well, if he's picking it, it's got to be good, right? We don't have that here, but, you go to any other shop, there's always someone's pick of the week. But now it's easier because they just put the spec of the week on in the glass, pick of the week, in those days. And then, and I don't know, if, I can't remember that far back, don't think there was that many indie titles. It was always either Marvel or DC, right? There was maybe a couple.
My shop had the Image and Valiant stuff.
Yeah, but we're I'm talking about like in my days, late 70s, early 80s, like 79 to 84.
Yeah, I remember calling up my local shop and giving her my list. And she'd be like, okay, and next. It was the most exciting phone call I made
during the week.
Every week.
It was the only time you got to talk to a lady.
Yeah.
Oh! Yeah.
I mean, I got
this,
most of
this. This was last week. This was like, I was young. I was like 8 or 9 or something, and I was able to like call and do business, you know? Like,
you felt good, didn't you?
I was buying something off somebody, and they were like, they were working for me. It was almost like having an assistant, you know? Yeah, she'd be like, okay, and you want this one and this one? I'd be like, yeah, and this one, okay.
Imagine being the lady behind the counter being like, oh my God, another 9-year-old.
I'm sure, yeah.
Booster gold, of course.
I'm sure. Yeah. And here's the moment I'll regret. Like, I was like, I need to save money to move. And the moment I decided that I was going to move, I had, like, I couldn't spend any money. And that's the moment that the lady at the shop said, my husband, who owns a shop, Mitch, he's actually going to stop collecting, and he wanted to know if you wanted to take a look at his collection and buy some of his books.
Really?
Now, Mitch had been buying books since, like, the 50s.
Oh, my God.
So Mitch had all the shit.
All the stuff.
And I said, no, I can't.
Why?
I should have said, I have some money in the bank. I'll be right over.
Why didn't you,
but
sir?
I didn't
Why?
Do it because I wanted to follow my dream of moving to California. And,
yeah, how'd that work out for you?
Yeah, I know.
Super well, let me tell you. I'm a star now. I'm on several shows.
Yeah, and you still can't afford the keys.
Yeah.
Right. I still can't afford the keys. But, like, that was the biggest mistake I think I made when I was young, like in my early 20s. It was like, I need to move. I got to save
my
money.
That's your second biggest mistake.
Yeah.
The first one was becoming friends with this guy.
Oh yeah, this guy.
But most of my books. Most of my books I bought were in 3-packs from like Kmart, because it's a value, right?
Also
right.
Costco. I used to get those Costco packs.
Either Fedco.
You motherfuckers
Zodis.
Rich enough to go to Costco when you were a kid? Well, yeah. Kiss my ass.
But I'm saying
it wasn't Costco back then. No.
Price Club.
They didn't even. First of all, they didn't have Costco's where I was from. You had to drive like 50 minutes to an hour north to get to a Costco, and then you had to pay to get in? Hell no.
Pay to get in?
That wasn't happening.
You didn't
have
membership.
You didn't have membership.
You didn't have Fedco?
How'd you get in without a membership, Kevin?
Yeah, true.
I don't know.
Oh, that's because your parents didn't tell you they were rich and had a membership.
Sure, not rich. How
rich ass
you?
Bitches.
How dare you?
Oh, y'all.
But I mean, I used to go to Zodis or
Zodis.
Zodis. What the heck's that?
It's like, a Target
back Kmart.
Yeah, it's like a better Kmart, like a Target or a Walmart.
Zodis had everything.
And I'd go there, and they'd have on their little thing a 3-pack of comics, and that's what I would buy because it'd be like 3 comics for the price of 1, and that's where I would get my comics. So, for me, a comic shop was like once a month visit my dad would take me, and it would be like you were super excited. Now it's like, you go, they're everywhere. Not everywhere, but
That was the 90s when they were everywhere.
There's a lot in the valley. Comic
stores. Oh yeah, the valley in San Diego. There's a shit ton.
Some of the comic shops you go to now, it's a toy and card shop that sells comics.
Yeah, combination.
That has like a booth in the back.
Yeah, you walk back there and like. They got like it isn't like what's that place in Thousand Oaks or past Thousand Oaks? The
Arsenal.
Arsenal's huge. They got their walls huge of books, but their new issues are huge.
Back issues not so much.
Back issues horrible, and then their graded books or big books aren't there. But then you go to other comic book shops and their back issue bins are fucking full. But they don't put them in bag and boards, so they're all bent and folded and trashed up.
Wow, look like
each shop owner is different in their angle and getting customers or whatever.
Some shops have soul, some shops don't have soul. But this shop, We Can Be Heroes, has a lot of soul.
Yeah, We Can Be Heroes has soul. All right, and that'll wrap us up. Thank you for tuning in for part 5 of Comic Shop Talks. Again, my name is Donald.
My name is Kevin. And great thanks to these wonderful panelists.
The, what would you call it, Showtime? What was it? The,
Comic Coalition.
The Comic
Coalition.
Thank you for tuning in. And if we don't see you out and about anytime soon,
then we will see you at the righteous, lovely, and sweetest comic book shop.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.